Hey, welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, episode 56. We are doing something a little bit fun today, courtesy of Verizon, and also my friend Steve Shunk happened to be at Watkins Glen last weekend for the incredibly awesome IndyCar race. And as Steve and Verizon have been putting on recently, the Lunch with Legends, we happen to have a, just a lot of fun. My Racer magazine colleague, Robin Miller, is a host. And again, thanks to Verizon, they have been pulling in some legends of the sport who've retired, some modern legends, and thrown them together for a lunch with fans to talk about everything related to IndyCar. And with Robin asking a lot of great questions and some kind of fun and cantankerous guests, these have been a blessing. So, since these have just been private affairs so far, I asked Steve if it would be okay to just record the audio of the conversation between this Lunch with Legends at Watkins Glen, which had Robin, Indy 500 winner Bobby Rahal, everything winner Dario Franchitti, and his contemporary Elio Castroneves, and it didn't disappoint. Missed about the first 10 minutes or so. I forget what I was doing. I'm sure it wasn't nearly as important. But missed about the first 10 minutes. Apparently Bob told some great stories about racing at Watkins Glen, Formula One, Can-Am, you name it. But nonetheless, between the three of them, and also Dario needling Elio a little bit, the topic of taxes comes up, which is really funny. But this is pretty cool. Just turn on the audio recorder. It's a room full of maybe 75 people. Some folks also asked some questions at the end, and from what I'm told by our friends at Verizon, not only will they be doing more, they're going to look to try and make these available in real time, streaming over the networks, maybe, I don't know whether that would be a Facebook or some other application, but hopefully soon, instead of just being in private rooms for private audiences and only available through little audio recordings. Hopefully these will be available for everyone when they happen and to watch replays of, because they are a genuine blast. And the last note is not this weekend, but following the weekend of the 17th and 18th of September, Robin and Verizon will be doing one at the season finale with the legend of legends, AJ Foyt. So, again, truly awesome. Thanks again to Steve. Thanks to Verizon. And here's a little gift of a podcast of good friends talking about IndyCar racing.
The funny thing is, this place, it is exactly what Dario and Bob was talking about. It's a DNA of what we're doing. You know, it should be part of it. It's such a nice, smooth and nice, I don't know who designed, but let me tell you, it's the one of the best track that we go. It really reminds Europe, really reminds one of the best tracks that we have in racing history. And because we have a part of the history, you know, we're talking about Bob raced for the first time in 1974, which was, I wasn't even born. sorry, Bob. And just to, you know, they're calling me old, but anyway, it's great to be back again. It's great to be racing. And again, Verizon cars today are so fast. And I tell you, we might see tomorrow. The track record
by 5 seconds.
It's going to be impressive.
Sure, jump in, brother.
Just two.
And it's not just the track itself; it's the stuff going on around it. So you go down to Seneca Lodge, and you'll see the wreath that Justin Wilson went down there and put up after he won here, because they understand the history of it. You go down to the Glen Motor, and I stayed in the room that Jim Clark stayed in. I actually have the key of it. So whoever's staying in that room, I will not put keys back in Scotland. Don't worry. When they were booking travel to one of the tests here, the guys at the Target team were like, where do you want to stay? The Glen Motor, and want to experience that whole thing. It's more about it's about the history that's built up around about this track and the surrounding area.
And Mr. Chicken. What's the place to eat? Mr. Chicken downtown. Watkins Glen, chicken and biscuits, that's all I'm going to tell you. Now, Bob had an experience I thought was really cool. Is it can't happen anymore in Formula One. You had a one-off of Wolf team in
79? 78. 79. Had two Grand Prix here, US Grand Prix in 78, and then Montreal, which was the first year they had the Grand Prix at the Montreal circuit. And again, it was like close to snowing. You know, it was always Yeah, it was October. First weekend of October.
But you didn't have a big test program or anything.
No. Well, I ran Formula 3 in Europe for Wolf, Formula Atlantic here.
No simulators.
No simulators. We didn't have Hans devices or drink bottles or anything.
No. You bet you bounced around the country.
You had to be a man. I did. The goal was to drive Grand Prix full time in 79. But anyway, that didn't quite work out. But I did about 50 laps at Brands Hatch, England, on the club circuit, which is a little 1 mile. You're kind of in a hole. And that was my prep for my first Grand Prix.
But it went pretty well.
It was okay. You know, we qualified, 20th out of 28 and finished 12th, I think it was. And, for me, it was just, I didn't want to do anything stupid and crash the car. But it was okay. It was, I think the biggest thing was every race I'd done up to that point was 100 miles long at most. And this was 200 miles long. So it was in a Formula One car. And again, in those days, you didn't have. Again, you had to be a man. We didn't have the bus stop. You just went smoking into that turn at the end of the back straight, hung on, but it was a thrill. And it was a thrill to drive in Formula One, however briefly, but it was a thrill to make my debut here at Watkins Glen. Of course, that was the year that Mario won the World Championship. So there was a lot of, a lot of coverage of, well, obviously of Mario. But just the Americans in Formula One. He did so much to raise the notoriety of Formula One in this country. So there was a lot of interest. And to be on the grid with guys like, Niki Lauda or Ronnie Peterson, really Jackie, all the heroes that I had, that was really a heck of an experience for me.
Dario, I think your career is probably one of the more interesting in that you drove for Jackie Stewart coming up. I mean, Formula One was going to be you, and you end up being a four-time IndyCar champion. But it's just, I remember talking to Justin Wilson when he came over in 2003, and I said, what's your motive? He goes, my motive is to be competitive, win races, and have fun. And he goes, Formula One's not that much fun. And it was when Bob got his chance, but did Jackie Stewart ever say, I'm taking you to the top, kid, or how did that work?
Elio was actually my teammate for 5 minutes one day. True. We'll get to that in a minute. But no, Jackie was very much, I did a test for them and he said, and I'll never forget it, he went and sort of to a bunch of Scottish companies, got funding, and he called me up and he said, all right, you drive the car, we'll find the money. But it was definitely a results driven business. If I sucked, I would be hitting the high road, but he was great. And then I did I was there for 3 years. My first year in Formula 3 did not go particularly well. And then Mercedes came along and invited me to come and drive the factory DTM car. So I probably could have handled it better, but I was out of contract because Jackie was setting up Stewart Grand Prix and he was changing the way that the contracts worked. So I was out of contract, so I went and signed for Mercedes. So I go back to the shop, I go in, and the team manager says, hey, this is your new teammate, Elio. Hello, nice to meet you. I always remember he was wearing like tasseled loafers with white socks. I don't know why, but I remember that. I'm like, it's really nice to meet you. Excuse me. I went down the corridor, upstairs corridor. I turned right, went through the main door into Paul Stewart's office. I'm like, hey, I'm leaving. And that was it. So we were teammates for 5 minutes.
Hello, story. Him and Kanaan, I mean, Eric Cab was, I'm going to let Elio tell you, but Eric Cab was Charlie Kimmel's engineer, and he was their landlord. When Tony and Elio came to this country and started running Indy Lights, tell us how many words you could say in English and what they meant.
Well,
and remember the audience.
Yeah, no, probably about 50 words we were able to say, and most of it was bad words, but. All of it. It was milkshake, McDonald's, cheeseburger. It was all of these things that we were able to actually buy. In fact, they used to give me per diem, and I said, hey man, this is like $30 per diem. You know what, I'm gonna go, in Brazil we didn't have vending machines, so I'm gonna go in the vending machine and actually save a lot of money, so it's only $1. So I was eating from the vending machine, and Tony looked at me, what are you doing? He's like, well, this is my lunch. Only you, man, just to hold that, just to really speed like a chip. Just so you know, when they were kids, and I find this very, very hard to believe, when Tony tells the story, when they were kids, Tony was the cultured urbane one from the big city, and Elio was the kid from the country. How things change, right?
No, you're right. Tony was actually living in the capital in São Paulo, and I was from 200 miles from the capital, so it was in a small city. And every time we became friends, and I used to stay in this apartment, or his mom apartment, family apartment. And it's funny because many times we joke around because we used to paint the helmet. It was in the same area that actually was a famous painter. We used to paint the Ayrton Senna's helmet. And we remember when we took our helmets there and the guy designed, so we're really proud to have the colors and everything. And we told this story once here in America that, you know, before we went to bed, we're polishing the helmets. And that translation did not came out right. The story about Paul Stewart, and it's absolutely true, I remember that. After, I was expecting him to be my teammate because I never said anything after that, and then show up, his name was Rob Furman, this tall guy, and I'm like, man, my memory is really bad because I don't remember meeting this guy. I mean, I remember seeing a, you know, a dark hair guy and a, you know, nice guy, but anyway, so it was, I found out later on what happened, but you know, when you drive for a big team, and today I'm driving for Roger Penske, and again, it's such an honor to be to learn with an incredible organization. Paul Stewart was an incredible, Jack Stewart was an incredible organization. Obviously, Roger, it's amazing and so much history. So you becoming, you enjoy even more the history of racing, you know, the heritage. And that's why when I heard that we're gonna be here, and I believe we signed for 2 more years, correct? So that means, you know, it's part of the history. You gotta enjoy. So here, places like Pocono, for example, that a lot of people enjoy. And then you're talking about Mid Ohio, you're talking about Long Beach, that place, Toronto, you know, places that is part of a rising IndyCar. And I remember used to watching at home the IndyCar series, and it was so much fun. And today is still a lot of fun.
All right, let's keep the mic because we're gonna go right down.
Okay.
How can guys that were all good road racers all became such great oval track drivers? How does that? Nigel Mansell won 6 races over here, 5 of them were on ovals. He's the world driving champ. Emerson Fittipaldi became a damn good race driver on ovals. How does that happen?
Well, there are two kind of drivers: the one that's going to crash and the one that crash. And that's why you're becoming good, because now you learn the limit. For those that learn the limit later on or not, it's so different. You start feeling you know, this slight change on the race car sometimes when you go into the even the wind. You start feeling, and normally in the road course, you're a little more aggressive. The way you drive in the ovals, you have to be a little more smooth so you don't kill the speed, you don't upset the car during the corner. So there is all a different technique, and but you learn with experience, because I remember my first oval in Homestead in 1996. I actually didn't race because I broke the tub. I don't know how I'm still here, to be honest, but it was a very big shot. And after that, I was like, all right, you just cannot just go flat out and nothing's gonna happen. You gotta feel the car, you gotta feel the, when you make a change, you gotta take 2 or 3 laps to make sure that everything is okay. So all these little details and experience, you know, you learn it with experience. It's not right away, but you have some drivers that, you know, they're really talented and all of a sudden they never crash, which is good for them.
Paul Tracy.
Paul Tracy? No. But there was, let me tell you about that. That's that is something. But but anyway, it's those are the things that in my career I was able to understand, and it helped me big time. My favorite oval today is Indianapolis.
Well, before Dario starts on his answer to this question, talk about watching Greg Moore when you were still a DTM driver, and then your first oval was your first race, and I don't believe you spent a lot of time on a test track or a simulator before Homestead.
No, I didn't. I used, when I was doing DTM, we would sit on a Sunday night in Europe, sort of 5 hours ahead, or 6 hours ahead it was, and I'd sit with Norma Haug and we'd start watching the IndyCar races, and you know, there was the big guys, Bob and Al Unser Jr. and these guys, and then there was this kid with glasses that I found out, because I said to Norma, who the hell's that? Who's this lunatic that's on the outside, you know, completely crossed up and passing everybody? Goes, oh, that's our new guy, that's Greg Moore. Damn, he's good. And so, you know, my learning experience of ovals was really perseverance. I definitely picked some cement out of my teeth out of those first couple of years. But as Elio says very well, it's the details, it's those tiny details of oval track racing. Experience counts for a lot, but it's learning the nuances of it, of setting up the car, but also what the car feels like, what you want from the car. It's a very mental thing, driving an oval. And I learned to really love it. At first I hated it, and there was a time it actually scared me, when it was sort of 2000, 2001. I was pretty scared by it. You know, those cars, the cars that you're driving today, the cars earlier, they bit you for very different reasons. The cars that we all race together, you know, if they wiggle once, if you didn't catch it, that was it. These cars now, with the way the power to weight, the downforce, you tend to drive them more in yaw, so you slide them around a lot more. One's not more difficult than the other, it's just different. But you got to learn and you got to adapt to that. So, again, it was something I never thought I'd enjoy. I kind of learned to love driving on ovals.
First time I met Bob Rahal, he's standing with Jim Trueman at the mouth of the gasoline alley. It was in April, getting ready for, I think, a tire test or whatever. Rookie orientation, that's right, it was rookie orientation. And your first oval, Phoenix, I think the car caught fire. It was some horrible disaster, sort of. And 4 years later, you're standing in victory lane at the Indy 500. And Indy seemed to just suit, just like Dario too, it suited your style.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, first off, I think a team with experience for a young driver is so critical. When we started in 82, not one of us in the team had any oval experience at any time. We were all road races. I had never driven an oval. Steve Horn, who was the team manager, had been at Can-Am and 405,000. The mechanics had all been in, you know, those kinds of categories. So we went, that first race in Phoenix, we went there, and, you know, and I'd driven Formula One, I'd driven Can-Am, turbocharged Porsches. You know, you think you kind of have a pretty good idea of racing, then you go to that first oval at Phoenix, and it's like, holy shit. I mean, it's like that was the first thing I'd ever driven. I mean, it was a totally different environment. And again, you know, first pit stop I come in, they caught me on fire. So, in fact, we were so shell-shocked after that race that we didn't go to the second race, which was at Atlanta, which is probably a good thing.
A good move.
That's probably a smart thing. And it was only until we had a guy named Lee Dykstra, who was a pretty renowned engineer. He came and worked with us, and all of a sudden, it's like, I mean, I never heard of changing, you know, putting corner weight in a car. You know, you never did that in racing or road racing, at least we didn't. And you know, so it's like, oh, okay, so that little light bulb above your head gets a little brighter with every race. And yeah, I think, and of course, they're bringing in more road races at that time. Cleveland, you know, won the first race there, and Elkhart Lake and places like that. But I think it's so important to have that knowledge behind you as a young driver, because it is such a totally different environment to anything you've ever done. At Indy, actually, you know, we were kind of tenuous in qualifying. We didn't do that well in qualifying. I think we were in the ninth row or something. But in the race, all of a sudden, everything started to click. And then we were, you know, running fourth and fifth with me and Al Sr. were having a bit of a battle. But it's just a different environment, IndyCar, on an oval. But it was fun. I enjoyed, you know, I probably won half of my race. Victories were probably on ovals. So, I don't know, it all just kind of... And I particularly like the 1 mile ovals. You know, I thought those were great racetracks. So I don't know.
You know, when my first win in oval was actually in the 500. It was my first win in an oval. So, but one of the coolest thing, it was coming back and Bob come to me and say, "Welcome to the club." That for me was like super, man. That was really, really cool.
Tax bracket. That's what you're in. All right, we got some fans here. Let's take some questions for these guys, because Elio's got another gig he's got to get to for Verizon.
Let's keep Elio in the tax discussion.
Experience. recently there was a lot of changes at the track, and they moved that part of the track. How fast were you going through that corner back in 86?
That corner was probably, we had, in those days, you had 5-speed gearboxes, but it was at least 4th gear, maybe 5th. I mean, it was, I'd say high, flat out. I mean, very few people could do it flat. Herta tried to, if you remember, it had that big accident in Waits' car there. I mean, that was a place where if you had a good car, and you know, as a driver in a car, the combination was good, you could take an advantage there on the rest of the field. And I don't think many people were able to do that corner. I love that corner. I thought it was awesome. It's a shame. You know, the track today, I love Toronto. Obviously, I won there and was on pole a couple of times and did well. But it's some rookie got in the way in turn one. But I think Toronto's a fabulous place. It's unfortunately, it's getting like Vancouver used to be, where every year you went to Vancouver, the track was different because somebody put a new building up. And I just hope that they're able to, you know, I think this year's fix was probably maybe the best that could have been done, but I hope they can make it a proper corner again.
Bobby, you talked about the research that you're a big part of that.
Yeah. Well, it's the International Motor Racing Research Center. I'm the chairman of the director of the board. It is an amazing place. If you have any interest in any aspect of motor racing, that's where you go. If you want to write a book, or if you just want to research something, or we get people from all around the world coming to Watkins Glen to look into all the records. Recently, we got all the records of SCCA, 70 years worth of SCCA racing in this country. We got all the National Speed Sport News, Chris Economaki, Rob Dyson, you probably might have heard of Rob's name, he's a longtime racer. He had bought all the archives of National Speed Sport and gave them to us. I mean, our biggest problem, frankly, is we have so much, you know, we're trying to store it all, and to store it safely is a real challenge. But it's a fabulous place. They usually have a great race car. They had Mark Donohue 73 Eagle Indy car down there. Last time I was there, I don't know what's down there today, but it really is. It's just down the hill. It's down by the school in the library. It's kind of attached to the Watkins Glen Library, and it's really something to see.
Before we take our next question, I want to say thanks to Michael Brent for saving us,
absolutely,
bringing us back here to Watkins Glen.
Watkins Glen, love to see them at like a Laguna Seca or some. I mean, these tracks, our cars belong where they can. You can really see what they can do.
Plus, they stepped up. I mean, 90 days ago, they called Michael Jay Fry and said, "Hey, we need help, man. Boston went away. Can you help us?" And to step in and do that, I mean, the response has been really good, and it's going to be a hell of a race, like all the races have been this year. But big tip of the hat for doing that, brother.
Thanks, Michael.
All right, young man. Victory lane doesn't count.
I got no idea what it looks like. Actually, yeah, I went to visit Justin there. I'm trying to think to a lap here. I mean, I love the turn five area. I love the whole place. It was one of those things when you did a lap here, I would go and then look up and I was like P3. That compromise we talked about, trying to put that whole lap together, but there was a lot of areas in this lap where I was hanging on, coming through a corner, thinking, "Oh, this is serious now." And that to me was what makes a great racetrack, and this is definitely one.
Yeah, very similar. Bus stop for me is bus stop and the carousel. It's a great combination of how deep you can go and to the limit, literally to the limit. And the bootleg also is really cool because it's a combination of a lot of things. And Dario is exactly right. All of a sudden you come back and piss on, man. And sometimes even during the lap, after you finish the lap, it's like, woo, that was a good one, yes. And then I'm like, P5, what? You know, are you kidding me? So hopefully the victory this weekend, but it is definitely a great place.
This is even fun in a stock car for me, so that's saying something.
Well, you know, I didn't run here in Indy cars, but you know, I think, of course, it doesn't. It's not. It's kind of there, but the loop at the end, you know, the end of the back straight, without the bus stop. In those days, Can-Am Formula One. I mean, it was a real. I mean, you were moving pretty good going in there, and it was just. I don't know. It was just like that corner, because again, I think if you really worked hard and you had the car right, you could make a difference. You could have gain an advantage over it. And that's what makes these tracks so satisfying, is you really do see the guys who can. I mean, they, you know, here especially. It's all about, you know, how little downforce can you run, because you have such a long straightaway, but you need the downforce in the corner, so what's that, you know, and so you get guys, you know, nobody's out there going around with one hand on the wheel, I can tell you.
Yeah, any more questions? Yes?
Elliot, just between us, what did you tell Hitch about tips?
On Dancing with the Stars, yes. That's right, yes.
No, that's no rhythm.
I told him he's obviously a little bit nervous. He said he doesn't have much time to practice, and he said relax, because people, you're not going to be, well, we got to vote, obviously. We got to help him out, let's put it this way. But people are not going to take a bad impression just if you really bad. If he's really, really bad, and then there's no chance. I mean, you got to have a little bit of rhythm. But I do feel he has a personality. He has the partner that I think is going to be great, push him along the way. Just be patient and have a lot of fun. I mean, I told you, have a lot of fun. Don't take this as your day living, because if you do that, you're gonna go downhill. Just relax, have fun, enjoy, be yourself, and I guarantee he's gonna do well. So, and I really wish. I hope I can go out there and give him more tips and help him. Special.
So you didn't twirl him around back?
No, he was showing me a little bit of his posture. I was like, darn man, it's pretty darn good. I like it. Listen, the dancers are an amazing athletes. They know they've been doing this for a long time, and they will take care of him really well.
Just remember, he's a white Canadian.
And that was some awesome Verizon Lunch with Legends fun, courtesy of Verizon, Steve Shunk, Robin Miller, Bobby Rahal, Dario Franchitti, and Elio Castroneves. Hopefully we'll have some more as more are produced in the future. So thanks again for listening in. Check out more podcasts and other content at marshallpruitt.com.